Chapter 10. The woman standing in the middle of the road with her mechanical horse stared me down, and it took me a moment to process all of her words. A robbery? She and these other desperados were robbing us? I'd never been in a situation like this in my life. And when I glanced at Cecilia and Cleia out of the corners of their eyes, it was clear to me that neither of them had too. Their beautiful faces were drawn into mirrored masks of terror and fear. What in the hell were we going to do? We couldn't hand over our supplies. We needed those in order to make it to Valestia.
Are you deaf?
The leader barked.
Did you not hear me? Hand over all your supplies and valuables, or one of you will lose your life. I'm not joking around with you. I threaten to shoot your cute little consort, but I doubt he means much to you.
Ah, yes. I suddenly remembered that in this situation I wasn't seen as the leader of the group. I was simply a consort or worker sitting between two of my mistresses, but I could use this to my advantage. Carefully, I leaned back in my seat, turned my head slightly toward the window, and glanced in behind me. Daisy and Ryan's eyes were wide with fear, but they looked more than ready to battle against this ragtag group of women on their mechanical horses. "Hand me," I whispered through the window, "my staff." The bear girl nodded her head, shuffled away silently toward the hall between our bedroom and the formal drawing room, and grabbed the weapon.
"Hello?"
the leader scoffed.
"We ain't got all day. Get to it. Hand over your valuables and all your supplies, or I'll start blasting. I can assure you, you don't want a bullet between the eyes."
"We don't have any supplies," I broke in, and the leader settled her eyes on me below her wide-brimmed hat. "Please, just leave us alone. We don't have anything to give you." The woman with the metal arm cackled.
"That's pretty darn funny. But no dice, honey. We've been watching you for a while now, and we just know you've got lots of goods squirreled away inside that massive wagon. Now, hop down from there and give us everything you got. I'm done asking nicely."
I examined the woman more closely this time and took in all of her features. Her shoulder-length hair was the color of summer leaves, a deep forest green, and her glittering eyes underneath the brim of the hat were a deep scarlet. Her clothes, which consisted of a tight-fitting man's shirt, a ripped skirt, and a pair of ripped trousers, were dusty and covered in splotches of mud. When she lifted her face to me, I noticed the enormous scar that started at her hairline and zigzagged down to her chin. Her nose was pointed, her cheeks were thin, and her chin came to a rounded point. She looked like a hard woman who'd only known cruelty and hatred all of her life. And I already knew from past experience there was no point in arguing with someone like this. They always got what they wanted, even if they had to take it by force. Then I noticed the strange weapon strapped to her back. It resembled the flintlock held in her hand, but a bit different. The barrel was much longer, probably at 28 inches, and from the look of it, it could shoot two rounds at the same time instead of a single one. Across the woman's chest was a leather strap with loops that held what looked like bullet cartridges pushed into each slot. What kind of weapon was this? Was it a more advanced revolver?
"All right,"
the leader snapped.
"It seems that no one is listening or taking me seriously."
The leader's thumb lifted, pressed against the gun's hammer, and then pulled it back. My breath caught in my throat, and it felt as if time stood still for a few seconds before the gun exploded in her mechanical hand. I could have sworn I saw the bullet twist out of the barrel with a blast of black powder. Within a single breath, I felt the heat of the bullet rush toward me, but then instantly, cold washed over me. The sensation was familiar, and when I glanced over at Cleia, the Nyx woman held a hand out in front of her, holding the ice disc as a barrier, and in the other, offered me my staff. Somehow, in a matter of seconds, the turquoise-haired woman had reached through the window, grabbed the staff from Daisy, and had put up the shield to protect us. I had no time to marvel at her speed, and hastily took the staff from her hands. The moment my hands wrapped around it, I felt waves of power rush through me, and I raised my head. I stared through the mirror-like ice in front of us, and finally saw the bullet encapsulated before my very eyes. Behind it, the desperado's leader gawked at the wall of floating ice with wide eyes and mouth agape. In an instant, the leader's jaw snapped shut, her jaw clenched, and she slammed her pistol back into its holster. Then she brought her mechanical arm and puffed out her cheeks as she concentrated. I scrambled down out of the driver's seat with Cleia and Cecilia in tow, as the desperado's metal arm bulged and then suddenly expanded to 3 times its normal size. The leader drew her arm back, gripped the reins tightly in her other hand, and smashed through the ice barrier. I almost couldn't believe what I saw as the bullet freed itself from the thick, frozen water, zoomed through the air, and then shimmered in the light. I slowly watched as the bullet broke down into a liquid in the air, fluidly trickled down, and became part of the desperado's mechanical arm. A metal elemental? Is that what she is?
That's what it seems,
Daisy screamed, burst through the caravan's door, and planted her feet with her hands curled into fists.
We better get ready. The rest of the riders are coming up on us right now.
An enormous fireball blasted out of the caravan's door, and Ryan came tumbling out after the brunette. The imp woman rolled along the sand for a second and then jumped to her feet with an enormous cloud of black smoke. The black-haired beauty had that crazed look in her eyes that she always got right before a battle, and I knew she was more than prepared to rip these women apart. Shortly after the imp woman, Valerie and Josephine leapt over the small step and landed in the sand in defensive stances, with their arms raised and their usually smooth faces hardened into masks of rage. Suddenly, the hairs on the back of my neck and arms raised, and a neon yellow light flashed and beat in the doorway of the caravan. Just as I suspected, Edeni floated out, surrounded by her usual orbs of undulating electricity. The she-wolf's tail whipped out behind her, and her holy white eyes settled on the 4 approaching women. A wicked grin spread over the Duchess's face, and her right hand, which held a single orb, jabbed out in their direction. The undulating sphere rocketed forward, and for a moment I thought it would miss entirely, but Edeni's outstretched hand clenched. The yellow ball veered through the air, lifted upward, and then slammed down directly into the middle of the lead rider's back. An ear-splitting scream broke across the desert, and the rider fell from her metal horse's back. The woman's hands clutched at her chest, and her entire body convulsed from the sudden surge of electricity coursing through her body. Not to mention, she was sitting atop a very conductive metal. The she-wolf summoned up 2 more orbs of electricity and settled her eyes on the other 3 riders with glinting glee in her holy white eyes. Sorry, I chuckled darkly, tossed the staff to my left hand, and tested the grip. What did you ask again? I didn't quite hear you over all the noise. I slashed the staff out in front of me, and instantly it began to transform into the enormous, jagged sword I'd only summoned a few times before. The leader gasped loudly, and then she pulled back the reins as she attempted to scurry away, but I hadn't even started on her yet. My women broke into formation around me, and I stood at the front with my sword held out protectively in front of me. If this woman thought we would give up so easily, then she had thought very wrong. "I asked you a question," I sneered. "Aren't you going to answer?" We stood in complete silence for a moment, and then a soft gasp came from behind me. I barely glanced over my shoulder as Josephine lowered her hands to her waist, tilted back her head, and stared up at the desperado's leader. The heiress took a tentative step forward, and immediately the leader pulled her horse backward.
"Wait,"
the honey blonde gasped.
"Please don't. We don't want to hurt you." "What?"
Valerie coughed.
"That's certainly what we intend to do. They threatened to rob us." "She pointed a gun at Charles's head,"
Cleia protested.
"Josephine, stop!"
"Josephine?" I asked as the honey blonde came to stand at my shoulder. "What is it?"
"I know you,"
the heiress uttered.
"Do you remember me? It's me, Josephine."
The desperado stared down at the honey blonde with a frown for a moment, and then spat in the sand to the left of her horse.
"Nah,"
the leader shook her head.
"I can't say I do, ma'am."
"You do,"
Josephine nodded.
"Because I remember you so clearly. You're a harlot, aren't you?"
"What?"
Ryan gasped.
"Excuse me?"
Edeni balked. "You know her?" I asked. The desperado glared down at Josephine for what seemed like hours, and then finally the severe woman leaned back in her saddle, rested her knit hands over the horn, and smirked down at the heiress.
"And how in the world did you come to that conclusion, partner?"
The green-haired woman chuckled.
"Is there anything about us that makes us seem like we're men lovers? You look to be one, too, having a male leader and all."
"I am one,"
the drake woman nodded.
"In fact, I'm the daughter of the woman who created the harlots. I've seen you before. I've met you, but that was a long time ago, and you certainly weren't patrolling around the desert then. We met at a rally not far from here. Your name was Matilda. Matilda Ware, isn't that right?
A melancholy smile spread over the desperado's lips, and she shook her head out of embarrassment. Finally, the leader threw her head back and laughed toward the cloudless sky for a moment before staring down at the honey blonde for a long time.
Well, miss, it's quite strange that you'd remember me after so many years,
Matilda snorted.
But I think I'm starting to remember you, too. You look like a serpent now in that costume. But I recall you as the real nice girl who got up on stage and told everyone what it was like being raised in a purely harlotian household. You painted such pretty pictures of what the future could be like if we just accepted men as equals. That stuck with me for a real long time, little lady. Now, what are you all doing out here? We almost robbed you blind.
Exactly what the harlots have wanted to happen for a long time, I stated, stepped forward, and lowered my weapon. We're starting a revolution. We're rising up against the matriarchy with the help of my soldiers and monster women.
Monster women?
Matilda questioned and tipped back her hat.
Well, I just thought all of you were wearing strange costumes. You come across a lot of strange folks out in the middle of the desert, especially since we live out here and don't go into the towns very often. So we never know what the Krats will be wearing any time soon.
Krats?
Valerie asked and wrinkled her nose.
Is that another group of people who live around here?
Oh, you know.
Matilda waved her hand.
Those annoying aristos. We have to deal with them out here from time to time. We stop their stagecoaches and rob them before they can reach Valestia. Serves them right for encroaching on someone else's property.
Property? I chuckled, lifted my arms, and gestured toward the desert around us. Is this your property?
Well,
the desperado shrugged.
No one else is going to claim it. We might as well take it for our own.
How did all of this happen?
The Marchioness happened,
Matilda replied dryly.
Came into our city and destroyed everything in her path. Ruined our leader, kicked her out, and basically told all of us that we needed to hand over all our goods, money, and supplies to send to the Queen. We about had enough at that point. So I rallied up all of my like-minded friends, and we left. Kind of puttered around for a bit, and then made friends with an unlikely woman who built us these horses and even made me a new arm. You see, I was born without it, but she managed to create a new one that went along with my birth-given power. What you said is correct. I'm a metal elemental, and my arm serves as an extension of that ability.
Wait, I interrupted and stepped forward. Someone built them for you? Was it a capital scientist, perhaps?
Yes.
Matilda nodded.
She wasn't located in the capital at the time. I'm not sure if you're aware, but a series of intricate waterways connect the cities closest to the capital. A lot of the aristocrats use them because it's much faster to travel that way. The roads often become congested, and the waters are wide with plenty of space. She has this hand-built contraption. She called it a submersible, I think. It's like a big boat, but...
It can travel underneath the water instead of on top of it? A submarine, if you will.
Yes.
The desperado nodded.
But she'd travel from city to city, selling her handmade wares, and that's where we found her. We were raiding and pillaging the small town of all its goods, and she popped up out of the water. One of our horses had been shot in the leg, and we had to put it down. So she offered to craft us these mighty beasts. Then once she finished with that, she laid her eyes on my unsightly stump and promised she could build me something to help. I didn't think she could, but a few weeks later, she appeared out of the water again and gave me my replacement arm. All we had to do was give her some of our supplies and a few bags of our money. Then she disappeared. We heard from her a few times when she'd pop in and out of cities, but other than that, she wasn't tied down until...
Until what? I asked.
Well, the Queen heard about her, learned about her scientific prowess, and hired her to work for her, which can only mean one thing.
She's keeping her hostage and forcing her to build the things she wants. Is that right?
Yeah. Something like that. We've only heard from her a few times now, and most of them were through coded messages. We deciphered them, but they don't make any sense.
What do they say? I probed.
Something about super... super...
The desperado struggled, and I stepped forward with my hands clenched into fists. Super soldiers? I nearly shouted.
Yeah!
The leader nodded enthusiastically.
That's what it said! We didn't know what it meant, but we knew it had to be something important. When we were getting to know her, she told us that she built one once before to attack the queen, but the damn thing malfunctioned and nearly went berserk in the middle of the capital. She went back to the drawing board after that, but she didn't have much luck. Now, she's somewhere off in the capital, working for that horrible woman. Poor thing. I wish there was something we could do for her.
The desperado fell silent for a moment and stared down at the sand at her metal horse's feet. Suddenly, she sighed, pushed back her hat, and smiled down at us good-naturedly.
Well, anyway,
Matilda chuckled.
Sorry to trouble you folks. We best be getting on our way. We don't get a lot of people traveling out this way, so we better start looking out for the next stagecoach.
Wait, maybe you can help us.
Help you? How?
Well, you're a harlot. Don't you want to change the world? Don't you want to make it a better place for everyone?
Of course I do, mister. But from what I've been seeing, the world isn't changing anytime soon.
It is,
Josephine breathed.
It's changing right now, but you haven't been able to see it. We've conquered 2 cities already. Not to mention, the harlots in the capital have revolted and taken control of a part of the city. We're heading out to Valestia right now to take it and its supplies. If you want to join a side, now is the time to do it.
I was once like you,
Cecilia broke in, stepped forward, and then cleared her throat.
Waiting for my moment to strike? I lived in fear almost every day, and I thought it would never end. That's when I met Charles and his women. They came out of absolutely nowhere and saved me. I didn't know I needed to be saved, but I did.
Join us, I stated, and then turned as the rest of the desperados slowly trotted closer. Our army will only be stronger with the 5 of you at our side. You believe in the same things we do, and you're willing to fight for it. Join us and step into a new age, the new age of total order. We can do this together, and then we'll live equally for the rest of our lives. The leader shook her head and snorted with a short, breathy laugh. Her followers stood around her with confused expressions, and the one who'd been blasted by Edenie's electricity orb clutched at her chest with a grimace. The desperado threw back her head and laughed fully at the sky for the second time as she clutched at her side. Suddenly, she threw herself forward, leapt out of the horse's saddle, and thumped closer in her heavy leather boots. I noticed now that she was a few inches shorter than Cleia, making her taller than Daisy, Valerie, and Cecilia. Her body was full and her hips were wide, but she looked lean with strong muscles in both her arms and legs.
You drive a hard bargain.
Matilda laughed lightly, shook her head again, and then offered me a rough-looking hand.
But I do like your style, Mr. Well, I didn't quite catch your name.
Charles. I smiled, grabbed her hand, and gave it a hearty shake. Charles Rayburn, the leader of the New Order.
Soon to be king,
Valerie chimed in.
And we're all of his future queens.
I see.
Matilda chuckled, eyed me out of the corner of her eye, and then grinned even wider.
Well, it's lovely to meet your future highnesses. Oh, Charles, you said you were on your way to Valestia? What are all y'all wanting to do there? It's nothing but a wasteland.
We need iron for cannons. We plan to conquer Granum, but they built an enormous granite wall around the city, and we have no other way to get through.
Ah, I see.
The desperado replied with a tilt of her head.
But I will warn you, if we lead you there, we can't go inside.
Why's that?
Edenie asked.
Well.
Matilda chuckled mischievously, and the women behind her started to giggle too.
We've terrorized them a little too much, and they've banned us from ever entering the city again. I mean, that wouldn't stop us, but we try to keep a good distance between Valestia and us just in case. They have this woman there. She has some sort of magnetism power. I can't go near her, or I'll be sucked in like a fly to honey. Then what are my girls going to do? They'd be all alone out here without a leader. The last time that happened, it took all four of them prying me away to get unstuck from her ability. So we try and stay a good distance away from Valestia for my safety and well-being. But we can take you there as long as I can stay a good distance away.
If you don't mind, could I have a better look at your arm? And your horses.
Why would I mind?
Matilda chuckled, shifted her position, and offered me her metal arm.
Look all you want. But if you want to buy, well, then we're going to have a problem.
No, I don't want to buy it. We've heard snippets here and there about the scientist, and I want nothing more than to learn more about her.
I wish I had more to tell you. But we only met a few times, and the messages we received from her were few and far between.
My fingers brushed against the cold metal of Matilda's arm, and goosebumps flooded across my skin. The elbow of the limb looked as if it were constructed out of an elaborate ball joint. I twisted the arm almost backward, and all Matilda did was blink at me with raised eyebrows.
Whoa there, boy. Don't tear it off, will you?
I leaned in close to peek in between the seams and watched as each piece moved in absolute tandem. The gears and pulleys were so small, but they looked expertly made. I needed to meet this scientist. She was an absolute master at her craft. But that would be very difficult since the queen kept her hostage. In one swift motion, I dropped my hands from Matilda's arm, stepped to the left, and stood in front of the colossal mechanical beast. As I neared it, the creature stared down at me with blazing red eyes, and puffs of steam exploded out of its molded nostrils. Oh, it's so beautiful! I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. As soon as I took a step closer, the creature reared back its head and huffed angrily in my direction, but in a way that was different than our normal horses. The noises that came from the beasts sounded the way they should have, but there was something different about them, almost as if they were pre-recorded and played back on a machine built within. I reached out my hand toward the creature's muzzle, and it immediately pulled away with a low huff.
"Aren't they magnificent?"
Matilda asked, and came to stand behind me with her hands firmly placed on her hips.
"I could never imagine the amount of skill and genius it takes to build one of these things, let alone know how they work."
"You said it only took her a few weeks?" I asked. "This amount of work, it would have taken any other scientist years, even a lifetime, to build something so intricate. And she built five of them in weeks? She must be absolutely brilliant."
"Seems so."
Matilda frowned and shrugged.
"She was a little batty."
"What do you mean?"
"I think it must be a personality trait of scientists. They're always a little bit..."
The green-haired woman chuckled, splayed out her fingers, and wiggled them.
"Weird. She has this giant puffball red hair, and she always wears these strange glasses on her head. She's this tiny sprite of a woman, but she's so agile and quick. You'll never know where she might be next."
"I guess some scientists can be pretty eccentric. Not all of us, though. Matilda, how do these run?"
"Well, they run pretty well, partner."
The desperado nodded and slapped a hand down on the horse's haunches with a loud clang.
"I think the scientist said they get up to 70 miles per hour.
70? I gasped. "Most horses can barely run up to 55.
"Well, that's the scientist's work for you. She's a smart one, I tell you.
Do they need to rest? How do you take care of them? Do you have to pop open one of the panels and refuel? Though that might not be as efficient as other means."
"We use these,"
Matilda stated, crossed toward the metal horse and reached into the saddlebag.
"Every once in a while, we have to go into the closest city and buy them, which is a bit of a hassle for us. But we haven't found a better way to make them ourselves, or we would have."
The horsewoman handed me a black disc and stared down at it a moment. The palm-sized item had a familiar smell, and as I shifted it to my right hand, it streaked my hand with black dust. "Coal?" I asked. "So it's steam-powered."
"Mm-hmm."
Matilda nodded, lifted over one of the stirrups, and patted a small square outlet in the horse.
"Sometimes we have to fill them up with fresh water to keep them running, and we have to toss one of those in per day, so we go through them pretty fast. We have a whole stash of them back at camp, so we try not to run out before we have to stock up again."
"Can you show me how it's done?" I asked eagerly. "I'm sorry, this is just so exciting for me."
"Don't worry about it, partner."
The desperado chuckled and then looked at the horse directly in the glowing red eye.
"All right, Nanny. Don't go giving me any trouble, you hear? I'm trying to show this nice man how it's done."
The horse huffed a few puffs of steam and shifted its weight on its glittering silver legs, but then stood still. Matilda nodded with a wide grin, then pressed both hands to the panel. A low hiss reached my ears as the panel depressed and then slid away to reveal a chute inside of the creature's stomach. I leaned in closer and took in all of the moving components of the creature. The scientist did all of this in a matter of days when it would have taken other scientists months. She was already proving to me that she was skilled in her work, and I'd never even met the woman.
This little hole here is where we pour the water in,
the desperado pointed.
The bigger chute is where we slide the discs in. If we wanted, we could put multiple discs in at once and ride for days. But we let them have one a day. Then during the night, we cool them down and give them another one in the morning. Sometimes we have to oil their joints, but that doesn't happen very often.
This is fantastic, I muttered. What about your arm? Is there anything specific that you have to do for it?
Nah,
the leader barked.
I'll oil it every once in a while, but that's every few months or so. I haven't had any problems with it yet. That or the horses. The scientists promised that they should last for a lifetime, and I'm keeping her to that promise, even if I have to hunt her down and break her out of the queen's clutches myself. A promise is a promise, you hear me?
I hear you, I tittered. Matilda, do you mind if I ask you a few more questions about the scientist? I know you don't know a lot about her, but you all are the first ones we've met who've actually known her.
Well, go and shoot then, Charlie.
The desperado nodded, shut the panel, and leaned against the horse with her arms crossed.
I don't have a problem with questions as long as I know how to answer them.
How long do you think she's been under the control of the queen? I posed.
Well...
Matilda thought for a long moment.
We met her maybe about a year ago. That's the first time we saw her. She'd set up shop right on the banks of the canal, and we moseyed on past as we were scoping out the place. Then we saw her a few weeks later, and that's when she offered to build us our horses and my arm. So I think she was commissioned by the queen about 6 months ago. That's when we started receiving the strange messages from her.
Do you know anything else about what she's making for the queen? I offered.
Nah.
The desperado shook her head with a frown.
We don't know nothing about that. We just received the letters from her about the super soldiers, and that was it. But from what we can tell, the queen's treating her pretty terribly.
What do you mean? Is there more to the letters?
You see, this scientist, we never got her name, and she never got ours. We just instantly became friends, and she made things for us. She knew us as the desperados of the desert, and we knew her only as the scientist. But somehow, she trained one of those wild pigeons to find us in her locked chamber. She's too dang smart for her own good, you know? And somehow, she told this bird to find us. And it did. She always signs her letters with a big, cursive B. So we know her name starts with that. But we don't know what her full name is. I'm hoping if we can find her, I can find out her name and thank her for everything she's done for us.
What about the conditions where she's being held? Has she mentioned that? Matilda took a deep breath and finally broke our eye contact. This seemed to be a subject that truly troubled her, and though I didn't want to push her to tell me, I needed to know.
The last few letters were a bit jumbled. The handwriting was scratchy, as if she'd written it while half asleep or on some sort of drugs. All of it said... All it said was, "Help," in big scrawled letters.
And you didn't? I whispered.
What can we do, Charles Rayburn? We're five women with mechanical horses. We'd get to the capital, and they'd slaughter us before we even stepped within the second ring. We wouldn't have a chance against the Queen's army.
I cleared my throat, stood a little straighter, and placed a hand tenderly on Matilda's shoulder. The desperado lifted her head and looked me directly in the eye as we stood in silence for a few seconds. That's why I'm here, I stated. That's why I created the new order. We're here to bring justice and, ultimately, peace. I'm telling you right now, Matilda, we'll get to the capital in a few months, and we'll not only free all of the men there from their oppression, but we'll find the scientist and set her free, too. That's what we do. The new order overlooks no one. We stand and fight together, or we don't stand at all. We're a force to be reckoned with, and no one will stand in our way until we get what we want, equality for all. I won't rest until we have just that.